everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm Jace.
And I'm Manny.
In this episode, we're going to be talking about some DC books for November 30th, specifically Batman Annual 1, Superman Annual 1, New Talent Showcase Number 1. We're also going to talk about our top three DC Rebirth books and our bottom three DC Rebirth books. And I'm going to say, in the interest of full disclosure, that my five-year-old daughter has a couple of her friends over. So if you hear any noise in the background, it's probably them. I apologize. You know, I told them to try to keep it down, but, you know, they're five. Doesn't always work out. So let's kick it off with Batman Annual Number 1. Give you the creative lineup here. This was a lot of short stories. So the writers on the particular different stories were Tom King, Scott Snyder, Ray Fox, Scott Brian Wilson, Steve Orlando, and Paul Dini. And then over on the artist side of things, we had people like David Finch, Riley Rosmo, Neil Adams, Declan Shelby, Bilquis Evely, Colors, Gabe Eltab, Jordi Belair, Yvonne Placencia, and Matt Lopez. So overall, I really enjoyed this issue. Some of the stories I liked more than others. And I wasn't necessarily surprised by the ones I seemed to enjoy the most. Based on which creators did those particular issues, it was kind of a no-brainer. Probably my favorite story of the whole issue is the first one. And, you know, being that this book came out on November 30th, it doesn't say it's a Christmas special. You know, it just says Batman Annual 1, you know, for the latest volume of Batman that started with Rebirth. And it does have the Rebirth trade dress on there. But it really, a lot of these stories were kind of holiday-themed. And for me, my favorite story was the first one of the book entitled Good Boy. That's the Tom King, David Finch story. And it's kind of a new origin, a new take on Ace, the Bat Hound. And I thought it was great. I loved the kind of the progression of the story with the little dates in the little dialogue boxes. There were a few pages where it was like multiple panels that were similar in size and layout, but the date was changed, so you knew it was the progression of time. And so, I don't know, I just thought it was great. It's not often that when I'm reading a comic, I actually laugh out loud at the end, and I did on this one. The last three panels, I guess, really, especially the last panel, it was such a great Alfred moment. I literally laughed out loud. I thought it was amazing. And David Finch on Batman, you know, you can't go wrong. The second story is the Declan Shelby illustrated story. That one was written by Scott Snyder and Ray Fox. And I thought that one was okay. You know, it's Scott Snyder on Batman, so it kind of harkened back. It's kind of a story that we've seen in holiday specials a few times. That one's entitled Silent Night. And I kind of thought, when I saw the name, that it would be a story without any dialogue, without any words at all. I think it's Captain America number 50. Dan Jurgens does a holiday story with Captain America, and I think it's titled Silent Night. And it's completely without words. So I kind of expected that. This one is not that, but it does make sense at the end. The third story is Paul Dini, Pencils, Inks, and Colors by Neil Adams. So the art is gorgeous. It's very much looks like classic Neil Adams art. I didn't really care that much for the story. As much, it's kind of stars Harley Quinn, who I'm kind of a little tired of at this point. And I thought that at times, just the storytelling from panel to panel, being that it's Neil Adams, you expect it to be absolutely like second to none. And it was, there were times I was going back and trying to figure out what exactly was happening. So it was okay. Not my favorite by any stretch of the imagination. The next story was interesting. It was a villain that I hadn't seen before. I'm not sure if he's ever even shown up before. Have you ever heard of him, Manny? Minister Blizzard?
No, I haven't.
So, I mean, and it was, again, it was okay. I enjoyed the interaction, you'd say, between Duke and Bruce at the end. So that was interesting. And plus, in addition to that, it also seems like it's something else that we're going to see play out in 2017, because at the end of the story, which is entitled Stag, the last panel says, end, question mark. The Stag is coming in 2017, so something to look forward to there. The next one, again, somebody that I'm not sure has shown up before, who escapes from Arkham. And also, I felt like the end was, I don't know, for lack of... I mean, it just seemed like all of a sudden, Batman just kind of wins. And I wasn't really sure. I thought the art was pretty solid, though. And, you know, Bilquis Evely, who does the art, I should say the script's by Scott Brian Wilson, she's going to be taking over Wonder Woman. So I thought that boded well. So I don't know. But the Haunter, the female villain of the piece, I'm not familiar with her. Like I said, I'm not sure that she's shown up before, but it's well illustrated, even if the story ended up being a little weak for my taste. So that's my take on the different stories. Overall, very enjoyable issue. Like I said, it was a good read, especially for being the holiday season. I thought that it suited, you know, it was well-timed. And I think a lot of these stories, I like when they do this, when they do, you know, they've done an annuals in the past. One of my favorite Batman annuals of all time, not sure what the number is off the top of my head. I'm going to look that up real quick. But it's The Four Faces of Batman. And it's a Batman annual that is divided into four different short stories. And I really enjoyed that one. So this is kind of along the same lines. What are your thoughts there, Manny?
I really only enjoyed the first one, just as an original take on Ace, which was an interesting one, because now it's... Does that make Ace a hyena? That's my only question. I mean, especially if it came as from one of Joker's dogs, or is it just like, was it a gag with specific hounds? But honestly, obviously the star of this story is Alfred, and the way he trains the dog, and just how cold Bruce seems at times with Alfred and also the dog. So yeah, the best panels are the ones where you see a progression in time, and Batman's really just ignoring him as he's getting mauled and just things like that. It's really good. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the like tank kind of classic weird mix that they draw the Batmobile in one of the pages. Looked really good. And then, it had a lot of humor. The second story, it was kind of whatever, because I've seen this before lots of times where Batman's patrolling the city and he can't resist but think that there's something going on because it's too quiet, and it just happens to be a quiet night, or in this case, a silent night. So not much to say there. I just kind of breezed through it, just whatever. And as for the third one, I found kind of interesting, because I felt like the script by Paul Dini didn't necessarily do any favors to any artwork by Neil Adams. This story, I felt, would have been a little bit better if it would have been drawn by somebody who does art a little bit more cartoony, for lack of better words, and because it doesn't seem to complement each other very well. So that to me made it a little bit weird. But it's another one of those holidays quick stories. Not much to it. Not much I want to add to it. And then the next one, it just really interested me at the end, because I really do want to know who the Stag is, and I'm pretty sure that she's going to show up Detective Comics. It seems like one of those characters that would show up there. Don't really see her, him, whatever, on a main title. And the last one had just really breezed through it. Didn't really care for it. So it was an okay issue. Not really a fan overall of annual issues anyway. Just kind of feels like it. I mean, I know you need breaks between stories, especially during holiday day times, end of the year, things like that. Just for that reason, a lot of times I'm not a big fan of annuals in general.
Yeah, annuals, it's kind of weird. It's like, what do you do if you force people to buy it by having it be part of the main story? Then you're going to have some people that are upset that they have to buy an oversized issue and spend the money. And then the other thing is, you get stuck in a place where if it's part of the regular story, then do you need your regular team to do it? And maybe back in the day when annuals were more of a thing, that was more feasible. Now, with how long art takes and just how complicated the storylines have gotten, and especially Batman being a book that comes out twice a month, it's like you're basically asking them to do four books that month that the annual comes out, because the annual's double sized, plus they have the two regular issues. I mean, that's a lot to ask. So I'm not surprised that they went this way with just some short stories, and it doesn't really tie in, and certainly it doesn't have anything to do with what's going on in the regular Batman title right now whatsoever. So I do like that it's separate, and I understand why it is. And, you know, in the past, they've done it where all the annuals have kind of a theme. This time, it's certainly not the case. I don't know. Maybe it's just a chance to kind of let some creators touch on Batman and see what they can do. I do agree with you. I didn't think about it at the time. But when I hear you say, you know, Harley Quinn and the story that Paul Dini's trying to tell, Neil Adams wasn't the best choice for that at all. You're right. It could have been a lot more fun, a lot more madcap. A lot more enjoyable had it been somebody else rather than Adam's kind of realistic take, his realistic, you know, style of art on Harley and with what was going on in the story. Yeah, it's very, very dichotomous. So, all right, up next we have Superman Annual Number 1, the creative lineup for this title. We had Peter J. Tomasi and Patrick Gleason, who are the regular Superman writers, handling the writing duties here as well. And the artist was Jorge Jimenez, with colors by Alejandro Sanchez. So this was an interesting story, much more so than Batman. It certainly ties into what's going on in the Superman title right now, or the Superman family of books, you could even say. Swamp Thing plays a big part in the story, which is entitled Tangle Up in Green. And basically, we find out that, and this is something that we've seen in the DC Universe before, you know, this is the pre-Flashpoint Superman. So he's the Superman from another universe, another shard of the multiverse, the DC multiverse. And so it appears as though his vibration, I guess you would say, everything in the universe has a certain frequency it vibrates on. So his vibrational frequency isn't lined up exactly right with this universe, and it's causing problems. And it's causing problems specifically in the Green, which of course Swamp Thing is the avatar of and very much connected to. So we see Superman's touch at one point affect Swamp Thing and cause all kinds of problems. And then, I'm not going to spoil it, but Swamp Thing eventually does something to kind of overcome Superman and change him in some way to help him to kind of fit into our universe a little better. But again, like I said, it fits into what's going on in the Superman family of books very much so, and I think we're going to see consequences. I mean, this hasn't been resolved completely. So, I mean, it even says next in Superman 12, Super Monster. So it just very much fits into what's going on in Superman and what's going to happen in Superman family books going forward. The art was interesting. I'm a big fan of Jorge Jimenez. The page layouts here are something I haven't really seen him do before. And like I said, it was very interesting, especially the double page spread with the two different planets where you can kind of see whatever Swamp Thing does to kind of strike a balance or a peace between this, you know, Superman and the new DC multiverse shard that he's living in. but clearly everything hasn't been resolved. And there's also a lot of echoes with what's going on in the story that throw hints into the whole rebirth thing with, you know, the rumors that Mr. Oz, that the character we've seen, that showed up in Superman books for well over a year now, I think, ever since Geoff Johns took over, which I think was issue 37 or 30, was it 32? I don't know, somewhere in there. But anyway, this character, Mr. Oz, has been around for a long time. Obviously, the rumor is that he's Ozymandias from the Watchmen books. So we see a little bit of a hint of that. Supposedly in 2017, we're going to for sure find out exactly who he is. So I think people that don't read this, that are fans of the Rebirth story, the in-continuity story of how Rebirth is changing the DC Universe back to how it was before, this may be one they sleep on, you know, that they miss out on. And later on, they'll be like, oh, I didn't read that Superman issue, but it, you know, may have to go back and read it because it had a lot of clues about, you know, who exactly is this Superman? How's he going to fit in? What's the mystery of the new Clark Kent? You know, this is all, there's all little hints that could be dropped here. So I think it's one of those books where if you probably need to read it a couple times, or even, I'll even come back to it at some point when we learn a little more about what's going on with Rebirth, how Superman, this version of Superman, this pre-Flashpoint Superman is involved. I may come back. This may be one I come back and read. So a really well done issue. I'm not the biggest fan of Swamp Thing, but the art by Jorge Jimenez is really, really good. As I'm looking through it right now, I mean, there are borders of panels that are the cornfields of the Kent farm. I mean, it's spectacular. Really, really well done. What do you think, Manny?
Well, I am a fan of Swamp Thing. I like the way he's portrayed in a lot of stories. This one in particular, it works. But again, it's another annual that maybe it will have some implications later, like you were saying, and maybe not. But I understand the need for balance. And I kind of get what they're talking about with as like a foreign Superman coming to the planet and maybe affecting the environment in a different way. And the right spokesman, obviously, for it would be Swamp Thing. And I like the way sometimes he's used in different stories for different purposes. I know they used him recently in Poison Ivy Cycle of Life and Death. Hellblazer used him for a little bit, and now Superman. He's really that almost like elemental, that midway for mediator between the heroes and nature. So I enjoy that aspect of it. As for the story, it's cool as an annual. Doesn't really do much for me. The artwork I thought was really, really well. I like the pages where he's kind of illuminating in light, kind of speaking Kryptonian. He looks cool in blue. And it was interesting. And but again, it's an annual, so it is what it is.
All right. And the last book we're going to talk about this episode is huge, 75 pages. And I thought it was awesome. And that's New Talent Showcase. So recently, DC had their first creator workshop. Scott Snyder had a big part in it as far as kind of mentoring the writers. And on the artist side of things, Klaus Janson and Jim Lee. So this is the result of that DC Talent Development Department. Eight short stories done by members of that DC Talent Development Workshop, and I thought overall it was super enjoyable. Again, they're not really long stories. What's really cool is a lot of them give hints about what's to come in 2017 from some of these characters. So I thought, you know, some of them were better than others. You know, some of the stories were stronger in certain issues. Some of the art was, certain stories, some of the art was stronger in places. But overall, it was really enjoyable. So you got a real big chunk of story, 75 pages for $7.99. I definitely felt like you got value for your money. So if I had to go through, like I said, there were eight. I had to go through and pick my top three. I would probably have to say my favorite was the White Lantern story. And next, I would probably pick for number two, Superman the Man in Black. And for my third is probably the Catwoman Wonder Woman. What about you, Manny? What are your what were your favorites?
My top three would have to be the Dead Man story. Definitely the Dead Man story. And then after that, it has to be the White Lantern story. And as far as artwork-wise, I really like the first Wonder Woman story that they have on there called Blood and Glory, art by Kara Randolph.
Kari Randolph. Yeah, he did.
He did
the Tech, I think it's called Tech, series from Skybound, Robert Kirkman's imprint.
Oh, okay.
I think it's called. And he also, Kari Randolph also has done some work for Valiant, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I don't know. So, something about the way he drew Wonder Woman, I really love. But those would be my top ones.
All right. Well, the first story in the New Talent Showcase was Hellblazer story, The Road to Hell and All That. It was written by Adam Smith, and the art is by Saya Ohm, who has done a lot of work for Aspen in the past. Now, I haven't been a huge fan of the Hellblazer in the Rebirth. In fact, I think I read the Rebirth one-shot and the first two issues of the series, and I gave up. I was out on it. It just didn't speak to me. I did enjoy this. This is probably the most I've enjoyed reading a Hellblazer story, since way back in the classic Vertigo days. I thought the art was well done. Not perfect by any means. Definitely room for improvement. Does have a little bit of a painterly quality to it. But I thought that this is the Constantine that I know, that I remember from those classic Hellblazer stories. Snarky, but you can tell that underneath that rough and gruff exterior that his heart's in the right place. So I thought it was solid, and I was surprised, you know, when I cracked open the book and I'm like, Hellblazer story, let me slog through this, but it actually ended up being really enjoyable. What were your thoughts on this Hellblazer story?
Same, I enjoyed it. My positivity started when I realized Zatanna was involved. I'm a fan of Zatanna, so I enjoyed it. I like Deathstroke. I mean, sorry. Wow, we're getting his name wrong, left and right. I thought Hellblazer Constantine, he was pretty good in this book, or the short story. Pretty good, and I do definitely like the artwork in it. A little bit of especially the coloring. I like that, and just the way that, like, Zatanna is outfitted, and also Zatara, just because you can tell right off the bat who he is, based off what he's wearing, kind of, you know, not given up, but, you know, just kind of worn down outfit. You kind of know that it's to be, I don't know. I liked it.
All right. Up next, we had the first Wonder Woman story that you were talking about. And it was that title I was trying to think of that Kari Randolph had previously illustrated. It's called Tech Jacket. Now, it's funny because, I mean, New Talent Showcase, Kari hasn't done a lot of DC work, but he has done some DC work in the past. But, I mean, this guy's been in the industry for, like, over 10 years. So it's kind of interesting. You know, they say it's a new talent, but it's kind of weird now the way comics are. It probably started in the 80s with the black and white explosion where you could, you know, you just, people were just self-publishing or whatever. So there's a lot of creators out there who've never worked for the big two that have been around for over 10 years. Like, Kari's a perfect example. I mean, he has done some big two work, but you get these people they've been discovered, they're on a, you know, high-profile book, but really they've been around for so long, and a lot of times long-time comic fans, people who read a lot of independent books may have heard of them. So just because some of these names are names you haven't heard of doesn't mean they haven't paid their dues. And at the same token, maybe they've been doing it part-time or whatever, and there is room for improvement. So this Blood and Glory Wonder Woman story, words by Vita Ayali, art by Kari Randolph, and colors by John Rausch. It's a solid story. I'm not a huge fan of Kari's art here. I like it when he does things like Tech Jacket, where it's a little more... And he has a very angular style, so I feel like it suits things like mechanical things a little better. For more and more organic hero like Wonder Woman, I don't know if it's my favorite, but I do enjoy his storytelling, and I like his panel layouts. And this was a solid story. Flash makes an appearance, and the story actually ends with So It Begins. You know, Wonder Woman is battling this demon, this monster that the gods have sent, and this certainly isn't the beginning or the end of the story. I feel like we're kind of thrown in the middle because we're not sure who's behind it, why they're doing it, and it certainly isn't the end. So Wonder Woman's got a lot on her plate now with what's going on in her regular title, so it'll be interesting where this kind of storyline, this little thread, shows up in the next year. I also really enjoy the interaction between Wonder Woman and Flash. What do you have to add, Manny?
Didn't care much for the story itself. I was really into the artwork. Just, it's a lot different than what I'm used to seeing the way Wonder Woman's drawn. So in that aspect, I really enjoyed it. It suited Flash a little bit better than it did Wonder Woman, but there's a couple of panels where I think she just looks amazing drawn in that style. So it was me more. I was looking more at the panels than actually reading the story. But the story was okay. Nothing much to add on what you were already saying.
All right. Up next, we had Dead Beacons. This is the White Lantern story that was my favorite of the entire book. Written by Michael Morrissey or Morikai. I'm not sure. Morecci. Art by Barnaby Bagenda. He's the artist that did Omega Man. And colors by Romulo Fajardo Jr., who's been doing a lot of work on DC Rebirth titles. Specifically, he colors Nicola Scott on Wonder Woman. So the colors are outstanding, very nuanced. This is a White Lantern story, as I said. So Kyle Rayner, for fans of Kyle Rayner who out there who can't get enough of Kyle, he's not really showing up in any of the Green Lantern books now. You know, he was in the Omega Man book, but that's over. But also his girl, former flame of Hal Jordan, Carol Ferris, shows up. So they always have a good rapport going on. Michael Morrissey does a great job of having their banter down. And, you know, the art's really well done. Again, the colors are kind of nuanced. It's got a little bit of a painterly quality. I very much look forward to seeing more of these two. I don't know where they're going to show up. I would imagine they'd show up in the Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps book, but I'm just not sure. But I really would like for them to have their own title, at least Kyle Rayner. You know, don't necessarily have to have Carol Ferris in there, but definitely would like to read what Kyle Rayner's up to on a monthly basis. And we're also introduced to a villain that I've never seen or heard from before. And he seems like he is pretty focused on... Or he's got a lot of animosity, I'll put it that way. He's got a lot of animosity for the Green Lantern Corps and all Lanterns, really. Much like the current bearer of the Phantom Ring in the Green Lanterns title, this guy feels like he deserves a ring. So I guess that remains to be seen exactly where he'll show up next or what he'll do when he does show up. You like this story a lot too, Manny. What are your thoughts?
Mainly, it's just good to see Kyle Rayner again, and also Star Sapphire. So much focus has been placed on Hal Jordan, Jessica Cruz, Simon Baz, that, you know, they've kind of gotten pushed aside for now. And I really hope that this kind of pushes forward a White Lantern story, kind of like you're saying. The artwork in the story was so good. The colors, they're not too bright either. They're kind of toned down, and they fit the story really, really well. And then just some of the pencils that are done are done really, really well too. So not much more to add than what you said. It's just really enjoyable overall. Easy on the eyes.
Yeah, for sure. All right, next up we have Hawk Girl Weapons of War, written by Erica Schultz with art by Sunny Liu. Now, Sunny Liu was doing the Dr. Fate series that Paul Levitz was writing. I think it went up to 13 or 14 issues before it ended. So again, not somebody who's super new. He's done some DC work in the past. I heard a lot about this story. This has gotten a lot of critical traction, and even to the point that one of the comic websites had an article like 10 reasons why we need Hawk Girl from Sunny Liu. My first impression on seeing the first page was I thought Hawk Girl looked a little weird. Sunny Liu, his strength is not anatomy. It's more, his art is more about emotion, evoking emotion. So the story was intriguing. I liked that she was, Hawk Girl's here. She's working as a detective in, you know, her human guise and trying to find Thanagarian weaponry and kind of remove it from normal human hands, where it can't fall into the wrong hands and be used for ill-gotten gains, I suppose you'd say. So I liked that idea overall. I thought it was well written by Erica Schultz. And again, this is one of those ones that seems, one of those stories that seems like it's going to lead into something more based on what we see on the last page, and then it even ends with the final line, "A hero takes flight." So not sure what's going to happen with Hawkman in the pages of Death of Hawkman, but I really liked this take on Hawkgirl. Probably would be, like, based on the strength of story, would probably be maybe even bump one of my other top three out and come in third. But I just, the art, just it, his art just isn't the kind of art that I like. It's not really clean. It's, the anatomy is not really accurate. It's a little more cartoony. And so for that reason, it's probably my number four. But it was really enjoyable. And I think I would probably pick up a Hawk Girl book that was kind of like a, like almost a sci-fi procedural, if you will, with Hawk Girl going out and trying to find these sci-fi weapons and make sure they don't fall into the wrong hands. You know, I'd enjoy it if she spent just as much time out of the costume working as a police detective as she did, or maybe even more time out of costume working as a detective than she spent as Hawk Girl fighting, like, supervillains and everything. So, yeah, very, very enjoyable story. What are your thoughts, Manny?
You know, I really like Sunny's art on Dr. Fate. It seems that those dreamscapes and going back in memory and magic moments seem to work well, a lot better for him than something like this. Like, you're right, his anatomy's not very good. And that really threw me off in this issue. It just didn't feel like they had the appropriate artist for this title. So, I didn't really care for it. Don't really care for Hawk Girl overall anyway. So, for those two reasons, it didn't really impact me as much as it did you or others.
Yeah, again, I think, you know, being that it's science fiction, you could kind of need an artist whose art kind of, you know, suits that. And you're totally right. Like, Sunny's art suits magic because it's more organic. You know, you kind of expect to see fantastical things, you know, things that shouldn't exist but do. Whereas with sci-fi, you know, it's grounded in science. It should look a little more realistic. And I understand that, you know, it's comics and these are people that have these fantastical powers. But at least the anatomy should be correct, you know, and the weapons should be angular, and they shouldn't be, you know, round and look different from panel to panel. And, you know, that's kind of a more of a magic thing. Like if you're drawing a story that has to do with a magic user, his power doesn't need to look the same. You know, if he's shooting like magical bolts out of his hands, it doesn't need to look the same every time because it's magic. You know, it defies all laws and everything, but being that this is science fiction, it needs to be, I don't know, a little more grounded, a little more consistent, I guess you'd say. Next up, we have Killing Time, written by Christopher Sabella, art by David Messina, and colors by Moreno Denisio. Now, David Messina has been the artist on ROM over the relaunch at IDW, so I'm very much familiar with his art. But this looked a lot different from his ROM art, which I enjoyed because exactly what we were just talking about. ROM is a science fiction comic, so the art there is much more defined, much more less stylized, much more realistic. And here, this art's a little more organic, a little more free-flowing, not quite as polished. So I think that really shows the strength and the range and the talent of David Messina as a penciler and an inker, because he did both here. So I really enjoyed that. I am a fan of Deadman, and I thought this little glimpse into the life he leads was very appropriate. I think that somebody who's not a fan of Deadman, this would be a great, like, if somebody were to ask you, who's Deadman? What story should I read? This is, like, perfect. So my hat goes off to the creative team, Christopher Sabella, in particular, with crafting something that was enjoyable. There's something to it for a fan of Deadman, but there's also a lot there for somebody who maybe wants to learn about who Deadman is. So, yeah, really, really, really well done. Your thoughts, Manny?
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing, that this is a really nice introduction to somebody who's not familiar with Deadman. Great character. I always think he doesn't get enough time in comic books. I thought that I like the colors more actual than the actual artwork in it. Just the way some of the outlines really make certain people in certain panels stand out. Kind of the mute colors that are used throughout. And I really hope to see more of Deadman in the near future.
Yeah.
I know that he has his mini series right now, but more like a Justice League Dark title maybe, or something like that. Just because he's such a great character. I don't feel like he gets enough love.
Yeah, I agree. I actually haven't read that much Deadman. I know he was in Justice League Dark, the New 52. It's a title that I plan on reading someday, especially because it's Mikhail Yanin art, but it's just, you know, one of those things I haven't made time for yet. But I love the concept of Deadman, and he's always been one of those characters I wanted to read more about. And I think in the hands of the right creative team, it could do gangbusters. I mean, and it's such a classic look, like, you know, with the white skin and the dark eyes, and, you know, you can make him look a little skeletal, and the red really pops off the page. I mean, it's just, yeah, he's a character both from the creative standpoint, from his origins and, you know, the tragic beginnings to his visual look. Yeah, he should be a lot more popular than he is. I think it's just a matter of putting the right team together and DC committing to a Deadman title. I'm not holding my breath, though. He's been around for a long time, and, you know, he's had some series here or there, and they've never really lasted too long, so. Up next, we have Digging Up Demons, written by Henna Khan, pencils by Emmanuel Lupacchino, inks by Ray McCarthy, and colors by Tomei Morey. So again, these are the three artists on the story are all names I'm familiar with. They've done work with DC before. Tomei Morey, he's doing the colors on one of the Rebirth books. I can't think of which one it is right off the top of my head. I was going to say Flash, but I think that's Yvonne Plasencia. So, but anyway, Emmanuel Lupacchino, she actually had a monthly book with DCU. She was on Starfire, and then she kind of pulled back from that. The monthly grind was just a little too much for her. She's been doing covers, and she has done some work on some other titles as well. So it's a name I expect to see, keep seeing around DC. She was actually discovered by those guys over at Valiant. I really love her art, especially the way she draws women. She draws women very beautifully, but they're not overly sexualized. They're not, you know, they just look realistic, and they look beautiful, and they look heroic. They look realistic. So this story was our stars, the Wonder Girl, the New 52 Wonder Girl, not Donna Troy. I haven't read a lot about her before. Cassandra is her name. And so this was a good introduction for me. I learned quite a bit about her and her mother. And it seems like this is definitely somewhat of an origin story, much like the Dead Man story. Gives you a lot of insight into who exactly she is. And it kind of ends on a bit of a cliffhanger as well. So again, I'm wondering where we might see her pop up, or if we might see a Wonder Girl. I mean, I don't know that we'd see a Wonder Girl title, maybe a miniseries. Or what would be great is if actually there was another showcase. I mean, I'd love, people say anthologies don't sell, and for the most part the numbers bear that out, but I'd love to see, you know, New Talent Showcase number 2 and a continuation of all these stories. I certainly would buy it. What did you think of the Wonder Girl story?
Well, I'm a fan of Emanuela's art, based off of what she did on Valiant over with like Archer and Armstrong, and I think, yeah, that's what it was.
Yep.
And then the artwork she did on Starfire was really, really good too. So it was nice to see her artwork here again. Decent story. Don't know much about the character either. The only thing I think I know is that the armor's not healthy, or something like that. That it can turn her evil at a moment's notice if she doesn't control it. I might be mistaken. I think she was part of that new Teen Titans that didn't go very well with a lot of fans. So it was beautiful to look at. And I don't know, maybe you see something where they bring back the new Teen Titans to fight off or to work with the regular Teen Titans or new Teen Titans. I don't know what you want to call them anymore. Damian's Titans. And so that would be an interesting like cross or something. So it was decent. I liked it.
All right, up next we had the aforementioned Catwoman and Wonder Woman story that came in at number 3 for me, called The Amazonian Job, written by Emma Beebe, art by Minku Zhang, and colors by Trish Mulvihill. The only name I was familiar with was the colorist. The colors are very solid, very well done. Wonder Woman looks sufficiently powerful, really pops off the page. The rest of the colors are somewhat muted, so I thought that was very appropriate. As far as the story itself, a little bit of a like con job recruitment kind of feel to it, and I thought the art was well done as well. It's not always perfect. Sometimes the proportions look a little off, but the panel layouts are very, very well done, very imaginative, and the storytelling from panel to panel is done well, as are the facial expressions. Again, this is another one of the stories where it seems like there's a lot more to it. And as I said before, Wonder Woman's got a lot on her plate these days. 75th anniversary, movie coming up. The previous story in this issue where she was talking about heading to Themyscira to investigate. In this issue, she shows up on Themyscira. Over in her regular title, she's never been back to Themyscira. So it doesn't exactly all line up continuity-wise. Maybe these are seeds that they're planting, stories to tell way down the line. I'm not really sure. Maybe they're just Wonder Woman stories that they want to tell, and you know, damn the continuity. I'm fine with that if these are just good stories they want to tell. So seeing a Wonder Woman Catwoman team up, the end dot 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 is coming, is how this one ends. Yeah, I'm down. I'm down to read the next chapter of this one too. It was very, very enjoyable. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it was really enjoyable. Not a team up that you'd think that you'd see very often. And I thought the artwork kind of reminded me a little bit of what we're seeing right now in Wonder Woman. Just really clean, almost has a little bit of an art feel. Very, very soft faces. And I thought it could have used a little bit more color, but not bad. So kind of like you, I would like to see a little bit more of this. Maybe a mini series real quick where Catwoman and Wonder Woman have their little adventures. But I thought it was done well. This I would want to see more of, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I can't ever recall, and you know, easily I could be mistaken, can't recall Wonder Woman and Catwoman ever teaming up before. I would buy a Wonder Woman Catwoman title with this artist. I don't know if you need to keep the same writer or not, but I would definitely, yeah, with this art, I definitely would. I mean, and I love that it has a little bit of a heist feel to it. So, you know, I'm a sucker for a good heist story. All right, up next we have The Man in Black, which is a Superman story written by Michael McMillan and art by Juan Ferreira. So Juan does the pencils, the inks, the colors, and this is my favorite artwork in the book. It's no secret that I think Green Arrow has been the best Rebirth title, the most consistently well done from issue to issue since it started. And, I mean, this just shows you the strength of Juan Ferreira. Absolutely stunning artwork from the first splash page of the story with a great scene with shooting star in the sky and clouds and background, and the colors are sufficiently muted because it's nighttime. You see a little glow from the headlights. You see a little glow from the taillights. I mean, details like part of the sign being illuminated by the headlights, part of it being in shadow, that beautiful glow from whatever that object is. You don't know what it is when you first see it streaking across the sky in the first page. And then we find out it's an alien. And then cut to Metropolis. I love the look of this Joker robot kind of thing. It just looks cool. And he makes Lois Lane look sufficiently freaky as she's been Jokerized. Really cool concept by the artist, or the writer rather, Michael McMillan, how Superman's able to save Lois from the Joker venom by basically getting down into her cellular level with his microscopic vision and kind of burning off the Joker virus. And then, again, incredible work by Juan Ferreira. Look at how drained and tired Lois looks in that panel where she's like, oof, Clark. Like she's back to her senses, back to her old self. And then at the bottom of that page, where you see half of Lois's face, and then it kind of, her hair is over part of her face, and then that darkness bleeds into the Joker sitting there. That's a scary looking Joker. I like the way that Joker looks. Very reminiscent of Greg Capullo in a way, with maybe just a little touch of Jared Leto from the Suicide Squad movie. So again, a really cool story. The art is outstanding. Love the colors. Love the way he mixes things up in the panels with doing things like Lois kind of bleeding into the Joker there. I like his Batman. The Joker on the last panel looks scary and freaky as all heck, as the Joker should. So, yeah. I mean, Juan Ferreira is... Man, he's climbing into my top five artists working in the industry right now really, really fast. His art is just stunning. Really going to need to get myself a commission from him. And it's going to have to be a colored commission. The fact that he, you know, pencils, inks, and colors. I mean, I got to have something in color because he adds so much with color, so much depth, so much emotion. Just, man, where's this guy been? He's a superstar in the making in my mind. This is probably the most enjoyable story that, I mean, it didn't really have the Joker, but in a way it kind of did, you know, it had the Joker's handprints all over it. I was at no point did I think, oh no, the Joker again. So it just goes to show you the strength of this story. What are your thoughts, Manny?
I thought it was a really smart story because it shows you how smart the Joker is. If he's going to go against Superman, he's going to use a robot. He's never going to beat Superman face to face. So why not use a lead lined metal casting that's lined with kryptonite spray or something like that? I mean, just the details in what he would have gone through to get Superman's attention, I thought was really cool. The robot was really cool. I like the fact that they put every little detail in there, including the shoes, the feet shoes that look very classy. But my favorite panel of this whole is right as he's punching the robot, and the robot's kind of in the background, just the way that Superman's conveying his emotion as he's punching through, and just how bright the Superman costume looks in comparison to the background and the robot and the hand that's letting him go. Done very, very well. And then right above, the one right before where he's burning through the hand, the way the yellows going to the blues of his suit, just the way the lighting worked in that, such good colors. And this is another one of those stories that I would love to see the next issue or chapter in, because what Superman gonna do? Because you don't mess with Lois Lane without paying a price. We've seen what happened in Injustice and in books like that where Superman kind of loses it, and Joker obviously knows where to push his buttons. The last Joker I thought was done so well. Very, very detailed in the teeth and in the wrinkles in the face. The eyes have just that blank stare that's almost like a death stare that you can call just looking right at you or through you. So, yeah, I'm not exactly sure why this isn't one of my top three, but overall, I still don't understand, though, what the idea was with the alien in the beginning. I want to know what that is all about, because it kind of really shifts focus right after that. So are we kind of insinuating that maybe the Joker is an alien or something like that? I don't know.
Supposedly there's three Jokers now, right? And I mean, look at when that alien walks out and he says, "My name is Enric Cole." Look at the smile on his face. Is that not a Joker grin?
Yeah, definitely. So, I didn't notice that.
Be. I even found myself like, okay, Enric Cole's the name. Enric Kol. I was like, wait, so there's no J. How can you, like, maneuver him around to make it spell Joker? I mean, there's a K, there's an R, there's an O. Anagram there. I don't know. It didn't. Yeah. Obviously, there's something more to come, and I hope we get to see it, man. I'd love, as much as I love seeing Juan Ferreira on Green Arrow, I kind of want him to draw Superman after seeing this.
Well, I'm really enjoying him on Green Arrow, so I kind of want him to stay put there.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder how fast he is, being that he does. I mean, I'm sure he does it digitally, you know, all of it, the pencils, the inks, the colors. I wonder how fast he is. Maybe he's one of those guys that could do two books a month. All right, well, the last story is a Harley Quinn story, Good Morning Gotham, written by Joel Jones, art by Sam Lofty, colors by Pete Patanzis, P-A-N-T-A-Z-I-S. This is another one that was just kind of bleh for me. I think Joel Jones is a super talented creator. I'm very much looking forward to her art on the Supergirl Being Super miniseries that's coming up. Here, she's using her writing skills. She's not the artist at all, so that's kind of interesting to me. But yeah, it's just kind of a typical Harley Quinn story in a way. Nothing about it really stood out. Didn't really care for the art that much. I mean, the art was okay. The strength of the art is probably in the storytelling from panel to panel. And I thought that Joelle Jones, probably the thing she did the best in her writing was she really captured the personality of Harley Quinn. But as far as the story itself, it just didn't really feel like it had much of a point to it. You know what I mean? safe is boring, I'd rather have an adventure. I mean, that sums up Harley pretty well, the Harley that we're seeing in her regular title written by Jimmy and Amanda. You know, that certainly, she has that sensibility there, so that seemed appropriate. But again, I read it and I kind of was like, okay, what was the point of that? So, I don't know. You're much more of a Harley fan than me. What did you think?
Well, I'm already used to seeing the Amanda and Jimmy Harley. Then you have the Suicide Squad Harley. So, doing little one shots of Harley like this, kind of like you, really doesn't do anything for me, because it's not part of a, you know, like a day-to-day life, kind of like I'm used to with Jimmy and Amanda's, where, yeah, sometimes it's kind of one issue and it's done, but it's part of a greater scheme in the long run, or another character that's got added or explained a certain thing. We saw with kind of with Wonder Girl, with Deadman, with Superman, a lot of these stories here, they have little points where we really want to see what happens next, what's going on. With this story, it's kind of a one and done. I don't necessarily care to know what happens next. We kind of get an idea that she'll go on some crazy adventure and she'll get caught by Batman and get thrown back in jail.
Yeah, so I mean, then, actually, when I think about it, the story would actually be a great prelude for that Jimmy and Amanda series. Okay, what happened to Harley right before she went to Coney Island? This. She broke out of Arkham and wanted to go and have adventures and not be part of the mayhem and be in Gotham anymore and be a sidekick to the Joker. So from that perspective, I guess it works. But I don't know if that's what Joelle Jones was intending. Because, yeah, I feel like the right artist could have done more and might have kind of added to the strength of the story, if you know what I mean. Like, it could have been more than the sum of its parts instead of just being, you know, kind of a ho-hum Harley story, which is, I think, how we both kind of saw it. All right, well, that's going to wrap up New Talent Showcase. You have anything else to add, Manny?
We need a number two.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, next we're going to talk about how we feel the DC Rebirth is going so far. We're going to give our top three-ish titles, and then we're going to give our bottom three. So you kick it off, Manny. It can be in no particular order. It can be exactly the order you think, however you want to do it. You start.
Okay, let's start with my number three, which is going to be... I wrote these down in a specific order. And for a reason. Oh, here we go. My number three is Green Arrow.
Which you finally just barely read. And it's in your top three.
Yeah,
I told you it was barely so good.
Well, you tell me that I'm going to regret not having read it from the very, very beginning. So I did. I immediately regretted it. It's so well grounded. It has its ties here and there with the show, with Diggle, but it has its own identity away from the show, which was great. So if you're watching the show, you can still enjoy the book, but you can also enjoy the original character, the beard, mustache, Green Arrow that we all classically love. And then the adversity that he has to overcome isn't so great, where, you know, it's not something that, like in the TV show where they had Ra's al Ghul, that the next big baddie or whatever seems like he should be able to breeze through it. Great idea of taking away his money, of stripping him down to just the Green Arrow, because to a certain degree, they even killed off Oliver Queen. But probably the greatest compliment in the book is Black Canary. She compliments him very, very well. I find their banter to be really enjoyable. And it seems like she, kind of like Mira does with Aquaman, Black Canary does with Green Arrow. And for that reason, I've found this book to be super enjoyable. And the artist, as we just talked about, that was featured here in the New Talent Showcase, really good to look at. Really, really great facial expressions. Really clean. And just even some of those bad guys, because some of them are like burnt and things like that, they just look kind of really morbid and sometimes even hard to look at for me. And for that reason, my number three book is Green Arrow. I couldn't really, there wasn't any other book to say that I was really in competition with it at my third spot once I read this. And then my number two book is Superman. And this may come to a surprise to those who know me, because I'm not the biggest Superman fan. Everybody knows that growing up, I've been a Batman fan. But I love the father-son dynamics that Peter Tomasi has put in here between Clark and Jonathan. It's been very, very good from the beginning and to this moment now, where they've kind of crossed paths with Batman and Damian. Still very enjoyable. I even really enjoyed the issue where they pretty much take a day off. They go to the fair, they do their own thing, and just kind of to see them in their just regular everyday attire, I thought was pretty cool too. And then their little trip to the Lost Island that was caused because of a malfunction in his science project, that was interesting. So, I mean, this is a Superman book that maybe doesn't have the big baddies like we've seen in action, but I think it's a really, really earth grounding book for an alien like Superman, who we're used to having to deal with so many more interstellar problems, and to see him have to deal with things like his wife Lois and his son Jonathan, who has superpowers. So for that reason, Superman is my number two book. My number one book, without a doubt, has to be Wonder Woman. This one was I was a little sketchy on, just because of the fact that he was going to be telling two stories at once. You had Greg Rucka writing them both, Liam Sharp on one, Nicola Scott doing the artwork on the other. One of them was focusing on her origin. The other one was focusing on trying to figure out which one of her origins was correct. The lies, as it was called. I had the privilege of talking to Liam Sharp about that book over at Stockton Con and what they wanted to do. The way the book, in both cases, when Liam is the artist or Nicola Scott's artist, where maybe some panels on purpose are left blank because the artwork in itself tells a story, which to me is amazing, because you can just see so much emotion and so much movement in from panel to panel, that the story almost tells itself, and that's been amazing. We also got to look at a little bit of Barbara Cheetah, her background a little bit, and then just the relationship between Steve Trevor and Diana, and then just a couple of weeks ago, we got our first in the year one issues, her first encounter as Wonder Woman at a mall, which was done so well. And now we're going into a different part of the story where they're kind of coming together, and it's been nothing less than spectacular. It's been a work of art, both in storytelling and in art. Those are my top three.
All right. You don't even have Batman on there. That's crazy to me that you don't have Batman on there. Green Arrow, I've told you all along. Superman, yeah, definitely a surprise. I'm not surprised you have Wonder Woman as number one. I guess I'll start with my number three also. I'm just like you did. But before I do that, I'm going to some others that I considered that I felt like were right there. Aquaman, you know, Brad Walker, Dan Abnett, been very, very good. Batman, I love what Tom King has done with Batman, liking it better than the Scott Snyder run. David Finch, great art. You know, he's a great Batman artist, but especially the Mikael Yanin art that's on the current story arc right now has been really, really, really good. Also, Flash. I haven't been a fan of any of the art on Flash so far, which just goes to show you just how strong of a story Joshua Williamson is telling, that it's still, I almost picked it. Superman, like you mentioned, for the same reasons you mentioned. Also, Cyborg. John Semper Jr. has been showing us a different side of Vic Stone, a side we've never seen before, so I'm really enjoying that. And then I put Titans up there as well, because it is kind of the main series you need to be reading if you want to keep up to date, I guess you'd say, with the Rebirth story, the in-continuity reason for this event happening. And also it has the Dream Team on art, so I had to put that on there. But what's interesting is if you look at these titles, Aquaman, Batman, Flash, Superman, Cyborg, and Titans to a lesser extent, these are like the classic DC characters, right? Like the characters that make up the Justice League. And so it's so awesome that these classic characters are being done right. So with that being said, my number three is another one of the characters that fits into that mold, and that it's Wonder Woman. I knew from the second Liam Sharp and Nicola Scott were announced as the artists working with Greg Rucka that this book was going to be gangbusters. It was probably the title I was most excited for, and it's completely lived up to its potential. The only reason I put it at three and it didn't go up higher on my list is it's kind of a double-edged sword. It is an interesting choice that they made to tell two different stories concurrently, one set in the past, one set in the current day. And so it's been really cool to jump back and forth in time. But at the same time, it's one of the things that's really awesome about the book, but it's one of the things I don't like about the book. And the reason that is because if they had chosen just one storyline, they'd be twice as far. You know what I'm saying? And so it's a compliment, but at the same time, it's one of the things about the book that kind of bugs me, because I'll read one story arc of year one or one issue of year one, and then as soon as I finish, I want the next issue of year one. But instead of getting that, the next issue is The Lies. And then by the time I finish reading that issue of The Lies, I want another issue of The Lies, but then it switches back to year one. So it's just me being greedy, but for that reason, that's why I put it at number three. My number two is Green Arrow. Again, for a lot of the reasons that you mentioned. First of all, the art on the book, whether it's Juan Ferreira or Otto Schmidt or Stephen Byrne, it's been top-notch. I mean, my favorite are the Juan Ferreira issues, but I mean, I don't know that Otto Schmidt's on the book anymore, but Stephen Byrne was a pleasant surprise when he came on. His art has been outstanding as well. And like you said, the dynamic between Oliver and Black Canary, how that relationship is being reestablished. I find Diggle to be an interesting character. You know, I haven't watched the show, but I do think it's important to have some aspects of the show so we can bring in new readers into the DC universe. But I love what Benjamin Percy's been doing. It's very much a grounded story, a street level story, and you know, in a way, when you look back at the classic Green Arrow origin, okay, he's this, you know, extremely rich guy. He got shipwrecked on an island and taught himself how to use the bow and arrow. And this was the old classic Golden Age story. And so, in a way, he was just like another version of Batman. Batman with a bow and arrow, if you will. And so, it's hard to relate. And some of that has remained. You know, he still was head of Queen Industries and, you know, his dad started the company and he has all this money or whatever. By Benjamin Percy removing that and bringing him back to his street level roots, in a way like he was in the classic Mike Grell run in the late 80s and 90s, it makes him a lot more relatable and it makes him much more human. And you can kind of understand the things he's going through and the fact that he wants to make a change, and, you know, having him, the setting be in Seattle, that Pacific Northwest where, you know, people are a lot more liberal-minded. It just suits the book perfectly. So I'm really, really enjoying Green Arrow. And my number one book that just just edged out Green Arrow. I mean, I agonized. I went back and forth. Is Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps. And I think the reason that I chose that over Green Arrow is just because he's a little bit more well-known character. And for that reason, I feel like more has been done with Green Arrow as a character and Hal Jordan as a character. And even with all that being said, Robert Venditti, the writer, is managing to still keep it fresh, still keep it new. And he's been the writer that's taken over ever since Geoff Johns left the book, and it's been consistently great ever since then. And with the Rebirth, what's happened is he's really ramped things up a notch with Hal forging his own ring, with Hal turning himself into a willpower bomb, with the fight with the Sinestro Corps, with the other Lanterns returning, but the Corps being decimated as far as their ranks. What's going to happen next? I have absolutely no idea. And that's really cool that a character that's been around for so long, I can still be so excited about. I mean, at different times in my comic reading history, Green Lantern's been one of my favorite characters. And at other times, I've not enjoyed him so much. And that's usually when I felt like he's kind of getting stuck in a rut. It was getting boring, kind of the same thing, villain of the week or whatever. I've never felt like that with Robert Venditti on the book. And just incredible art from Rafa Sandoval and Ethan Van Sciver. So for me, that's a book that's hitting on all cylinders. In a way, it's kind of the exact opposite of Green Arrow in that, you know, I talked about Green Arrow being really grounded, street level, and this is at the total opposite end of the spectrum. Cosmic and cinematic in scope, set in space, very operatic. It's awesome. I mean, if I had to choose between the two, I honestly don't know which one I would choose. That would be a very, very tough choice. So, but yeah, Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern Corps, Green Arrow, Wonder Woman, they're all really, really good. Just about every Rebirth title has been outstanding, but we do have a few that we feel are underperforming, I guess. So let's hear what your bottom three are, Manny.
My bottom three, let's see. My number three bottom book I have down Hellblazer. I expected a little bit more from it just because I thought it was going to be more of a maybe him bringing back the Justice League Dark together, a little bit more cameos. I mean, we did see Swamp Thing a little bit, but just not entertaining at all to me. It doesn't call out. There's nothing really special about it, and it's been a total letdown. But speaking of total letdowns, my number two book, and this may just be a case of how important the Justice League ended up being at the end of the New 52 DCU universe is, and that's Justice League. I mean, so much happened with Darkseid War, and there was just, I mean, it was Geoff Johns, it's Jason Fabok on art. It had so many implications with Grail, with Darkseid, with the entire universe, the Joker. We had Batman in the Mobius chair. I mean, there was just so much action, so much drama. It was beautifully drawn, beautifully colored. And then kind of it just, to me, completely falls off the wagon once the DC Rebirth started. I mean, you were talking about how amazing all of the books are individually. Wonder Woman, Aquaman, Flash, Superman, Titans, Cyborg. That it's a really letdown that when you put all these characters together, it hasn't been to tell a compelling story. It's just fallen flat, in my opinion. And then my number one letdown, it's a tie between Deathstroke and Blue Beetle. I really, really want a Hispanic hero to kind of rise up and really be mainstream. I thought Blue Beetle, in this case, was going to be able to do that. I think it's just been a hodgepodge of storytelling and to a degree even artwork. Deathstroke, to this moment, I still don't know what's going on. and I've tried to read several of the issues over and over. And maybe it's a case, like you said, that it's something that you have to read and trade. But I've completely disliked that book from the beginning. And with Blue Beetle, as popular as the character has been in some of the animated incarnations, I would have thought that the book would have been a little bit stronger. So for that reason, those two are tied as my bottom books. Some of the other ones, maybe I just didn't enjoy as much, but they just didn't seem like maybe my cup of tea. Nothing wrong with them. I'm not even going to mention them as my bottom books for that reason. It's just that it's probably meant for a different audience, and not much to say there. But yeah, definitely these titles here are a big letdown.
All right, fair enough. I'm just going to mention two that I considered. I'll say All-Star Batman. I mean, Scott Snyder and a bunch of All-Star artists. I mean, we've only seen John Romita Jr. so far, but, you know, John Romita Jr., I'm not a fan of his art, but I was actually pleasantly surprised with the first issue, and it kind of got my hopes up that maybe it wouldn't be so bad. And then ever since then, the art's been just terrible, and even the story has seemed very choppy. And I've come to expect more from Scott Snyder. And again, it may be a situation where a different artist, the story would just flow better. So that's been a little bit of a disappointment, but it didn't actually make my list because I didn't expect to like it because of the Romita art to start with. So also Superwoman, again, the title has actually been very enjoyable, but the reason I almost selected it is because it has been a disappointment in that I expected there to be a lot more of Lois Lane as Superwoman. You know, the Lana Lang thing, or Lana Lang as Superwoman, totally came out of left field. And I still have hope that, especially with what happened in the last issue, that Lois Lane, the Flashpoint universe Lois Lane, is going to reappear as Superwoman at some point. So didn't actually make my list. What did make my list was Hellblazer. For a lot of the reasons you mentioned, I thought he was actually one of the characters that was done very well in the New 52. He wasn't exactly who he had been in the Vertigo universe, I guess you'd say, of DC. Didn't harken back that much to remind me of those classic Hellblazer stories, but he still was enjoyable. It was a real slog to get through the three issues of Hellblazer that I did read, the Rebirth one-shot and the first two issues. It was just tough, and it wasn't enjoyable at all. And for that reason, it makes my list at number three. Number two, really my number one, my number two could really be flip-flopped, but I wrote it down this way. My number two is Justice League, like you mentioned. And like I said earlier, the Justice League characters are being done so well in their individual books, so to see them done so poorly in what should be DC's flagship title is a real disappointment. It's a real missed opportunity. And the fact that you would put Brian Hitch, who, even though he started like apparently 2 years ahead of time, couldn't get 10 issues of Justice League of America out on time. Now, he was writing and drawing that, so at least to start. But the guy's an artist. He's not a writer, I'm sorry. His writing leaves a lot to be desired, and the fact that you would put him on a flagship book with Tony Daniel, who again is not the fastest, who has a track record of being late and missing deadlines, it just seems like poor planning in my mind, especially when you're going to go twice monthly. So again, it's one of those books I quit reading because honestly, for me, it was unreadable. It wasn't enjoyable. And the fact that it should be the flagship title, and when Geoff Johns was on the book, especially with Jim Lee and Jason Fabok, it definitely and David Finch, it definitely was the flagship title. It was like the Cadillac of the titles for DC, and it's so far down now that I couldn't not put it on my list. It's been a real disappointment. And then number one is Blue Beetle. Like you mentioned, the popularity of Blue Beetle, this should be a no-brainer, especially with Ted Kord coming back. I was excited. Classic Blue Beetle, so many Ted Kord fans out there. We haven't really seen Ted Kord show up too much in costume at all. So that's been a disappointment. You know, it's Keith Giffen. I just expected it to be really, really good. And it's been mediocre at best. and we haven't seen Ted Kord do much. And again, this is one of those books that's coming out twice a month, so you keep waiting for something to happen, and nothing's really happened yet. I mean, it's just moving at a snail's pace, and yeah, just disappointed. Very, very disappointed. I was really excited about that book, especially because Ted Kord is my Blue Beetle, the Blue Beetle that I know was such a fan of that that series from the 80s with the Paris Cullen's art. And so for them to put this out with a legend like Keith Giffen on it, just, yeah, same thing with Justice League, you know, just I expect more. So that's going to do it for this episode. Once again, I'd like to thank everyone for joining us. Please visit us at the Comic Source blog for past episodes of the podcast. You can watch episodes of our YouTube channel there as well. You can find links to Manny's written blog, my written blog, and our sketch gallery. Also, be sure you're following us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Also, do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram. You can keep up to date on new episodes and convention coverage. And then we also have that partnership with LRM. You can go to lrmonline.com to enjoy our new podcast, The Nine Panel Grid. New episodes of The Nine Panel Grid come out every Tuesday, and they cover a variety of topics, a little more broad in nature than we talk about here on The Comic Source. So thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next time.